Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Great America Show. I'm Lou Dobbs. Happy to have you with us. With all that's happening in these wild and uncertain times in our country right now, it's easy to miss the sometimes small or shadowed events that could change our lives in America. Easy for any of us to not notice that Communist China is buying up strategic assets in the United States, whether farmland or pork processing plants or any number of businesses we don't know about simply because the Biden regime might have simply forgotten to tell us. And it's also easy for us to lose sight of what's happening out there in other parts of the planet that may well change the world we live in. Communist China is not so quietly sending spy balloons overhead and loudly threatening Taiwan and even Western civilization as a whole. And Xi Jinping has rather boldly made himself the Chinese leader for life, a perfect dictator of a massive totalitarian state that is supported enthusiastically, but for the most part quietly, by the globalist elites in this country, corporate CEOs and boards, Marxist Democrats and Marxist academics and Marxist media and technology companies, all greatly taken by the fierce efficiency and mountainous scale of Communist China and its ever larger ambitions for China's role in global governance. Xi won a shuddering transformational diplomatic victory in the Mideast when he mediated and shaped an all but unimaginable alliance between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Unimaginable, at least, to the Biden regime, and even more unimaginable to the elfin Biden team, is what could lie ahead, what could establish Xi's position as leader of a new world order. That is what may come as a result of his upcoming visit to Moscow and talks with his strategic partner, Vladimir Putin. Perhaps a truce in the Russian war against Ukraine. It is possible, no more than that. But if it does come to pass, Biden is no longer leader of the free world, and the world order will be altogether a different geopolitical construction. Our guests today are China expert Gordon Chang and political analyst, consultant, and pollster John McLaughlin for the external and the internal views of what is happening in our country and outside our country. We turn now to Gordon Chang, radio host, author, Asia expert. Great to have you with us, Gordon. Xi, on his way to Moscow, Russia's war against Ukraine intensifying. The China virus did originate in Wuhan, says our Energy Department intel agency, and our intelligence agencies, all of them, it turns out, knew it in April of 2020. What is going on?
Well, the U.S. intelligence community, Lou, has 18 constituent parts, and the Energy Department is one of them. And the IC, as it's called, doesn't agree among themselves. But the Energy Department came around to the view that COVID-19 was the result of a lab leak. And that certainly is right, I believe. There's just too much evidence to the contrary. Also, you know, the scientific community loves the idea of a zoonotic transfer. In other words, a natural transfer of the pathogen from a bat, probably in Yunnan province, to an intermediary mammal, to a human in Wuhan. But that, for many, many reasons, is not very likely. And by the way, even after all this time, no one's been able to document the transmission links that would prove that theory. So I'm with the Energy Department. I think it was a leak from a lab, and certainly that would be the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
Well, I'm going to go back a few years, actually, to late February and early March of 2020, when I said flat out, It not only did it come from that laboratory, it had to be engineered based on my layman's understanding of what a bioweapon would look like and be configured as. And the very reason that people were saying that it wasn't engineered was the reason I believe it to be engineered. And that is, they said, well, it couldn't have been a biological weapon, because it didn't kill everyone. It's precisely its ability to debilitate and deter that makes it an ideal biological weapon, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
You're absolutely right about that, because what it does do is it lays a society low, as we saw it not only in our country, but elsewhere. Most diseases which kill at a high probability are usually not transmissible. And the reason is that they kill their hosts. COVID-19 did kill, of course, but it was extremely transmissible, and especially as we have seen it mutate into its recent variants. And especially the experience in China over the last several months shows just how transmissible this was. But Lou, you know, there's one point that we should make, and that is that although, you know, we could argue about whether this started out as engineered, and I agree with you, I think it's engineered, but a lot of people don't. But China, if this didn't start out as a biological weapon, China turned it into one. They turned it into one by two things. First of all, we know that in January 2020, and probably in December 2019, they were lying about transmissibility of this disease. They knew no later than the second week of December of 2019 that SARS-CoV-2, this pathogen, was highly transmissible human to human, but they told the world it was not. And then in later January, when they were locking down their own country, and lockdowns are controversial, but by locking down their own country, they were telling the world they thought this was an effective means of disease control. They were pressuring other countries, especially the United States, to take arrivals from China without travel restrictions or quarantines. You put those two things together, and it's 100% that China turned this into a biological weapon if it wasn't one to start out with. They deliberately spread this disease beyond China's borders, including, of course, to the United States.
And it's important to also note, I believe, that they did so without a word of warning from Xi Jinping or anyone in the Chinese government, which means that they were morally, if not consciously and overtly, responsible for the murder of a million Americans. It's that straightforward. And there has, whether it is President Trump, whether it is President Biden, we have not held them accountable. And that is a sin, I believe, that will be notable over the course of the history that is written about this era.
And Lou, Robert Redfield, who was the head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, was told on January 3, 2020, by his Chinese counterpart, that this disease was not contagious. And the Chinese knew it was highly contagious. So this was out and out lying. And that lie to Redfield and lies to other people, including Fauci and Deborah Birx, they prevented the Trump administration from taking the precautions that they would have if the Chinese had told the truth.
I was talking with Fauci, interviewing him in late January, February, and he was maintaining that there was absolutely no reason whatsoever to put any kind of controls on air travel into the United States. He was also at one point suggesting there was no reason to have masks. Then he said there were masks. He went back and forth on that. But he never changed his view on the fact that transmissible COVID-bearing people from mainland China should be allowed into the United States. On its face, that's just ignorant. And in retrospect, the man had to know that at the very least he was dissembling, if not outright lying.
Absolutely. And there's something else he lied about, and that is, you know, in 2014, the Obama administration imposed a moratorium on the federal funding of gain-of-function research. It was just considered to be too dangerous. So what did Fauci do? He outsourced gain-of-function research to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. In other words, to what appeared to be, or what should have appeared to him, to be a Chinese biological weapons lab. Mm-hmm. And we know this because there are actually two public scientific papers, 2016 and 2017, by researchers of the Wuhan Institute of Virology describing gain of function research, and in their footnotes specifically thanking the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which is the one institute that Fauci ran, specifically acknowledging funding from Fauci's institution at NIH. So, you know, he lied to Senator Rand Paul in the Senate twice. And I think that he's been covering for what he's been doing with China. And that is part of the crime of the century. You know, Fauci says, oh, I think this is a zoonotic transfer. Oh, no, it can't be, because Fauci actually funded the creation of COVID-19, I believe.
And that exchange, those exchanges between Senator Rand Paul and Dr. Fauci are the stuff of great both historical value and revealing of what was actually happening, because Rand Paul had figured it out long before anyone else in that chamber. And the reality is that Fauci was lying through his teeth when he was speaking about gain of function, the deadliness and the transmissibility of this disease. And I want to go to bring this back, if I may, to those 18 elements of the intelligence community, including the Energy Department. I've spent some time in a number of the national laboratories. I am just stunned to find that there is no greater supervision. Each time I've been there, I've been astonished at the lack of security in any one of those laboratories, doing whatever the science is, whether it's Los Alamos, you name the laboratory. It's stunning to see how they're run like universities rather than laboratories for national security. Your thoughts about them being part of the intelligence community?
Yeah, one of the things that's really interesting, Lou, is that scientists believe that other scientists could never be evil. And although a scientist in China is working at a biological weapons lab, you know, it never occurs to American scientists that they might actually be trying to weaponize scientific research. And, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, we've heard so many instances of spies from China, for instance, walking into American labs and just downloading information, data, and basically pillaging that. And obviously, we just don't have a clue. You would think that after all the, you would think just in general, as you point out, but especially after all this time, we would understand what's going on. We don't, obviously.
Well, some of us don't understand, and I think it's to everyone's credit who doesn't understand, because when you look at a federal government that is being run the way ours is, I can't find a single element of the federal government that is immune or has any basis to claim a lack of corruption. I have great excellence of work. It just isn't happening. Our military can't claim that they're a better military than 30 years ago. The NIH, I have no idea, frankly, how effective they are, but they are not making claims on excellence by any stretch of the imagination. Our national laboratories are they should be called preservatories for all of the advanced work that they are accomplishing, at least in public view. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. And the military is the one which I focus on. And the reason is you have a China which is obviously preparing to go to war. It's not just the buildup of the military. It's also Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, trying to sanction-proof his regime. And most ominously, the Chinese trying to mobilize the civilian population for war. But we have a Pentagon that has no sense of urgency. And it's a Pentagon that's more interested these days in social justice issues than protecting the United States. And we have something approximating the hollow military of the Carter years. So I can't think of anything more dangerous than the situation we have now. We have a federal government in general that is out of control, that has ceased functioning as it should. And we need a Ronald Reagan to come in and do what he did, because if we don't, we're going to be swallowed up by our government. I mean, as Reagan said, you know, the government is dangerous.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about when it comes to China, when it comes to national security here today. But I think you're raising another point that I hadn't thought about discussing today, but I think it's important in what you're saying. We need another Ronald Reagan. I wonder if we are beyond the one leader role in this country. That is the presidency that is, we can rely upon one man or woman to lead this country. And by that, I mean this. Joe Biden is showing us a true imperial presidency. He is doing things unilaterally without even consultation, let alone the agreement of and the consent of the governed, and of course our Senate and House of Representatives. Janet Yellen is in Ukraine, giving them another $1.25 billion, a surprise present from the Biden regime for Zelensky and Ukraine. We don't know where the money is going. Ian Smith the other day, this senior spokesman for the White House, saying to James Comer that he didn't like the idea that he was actually being very vicious in it, attacking Comer, because Comer, the head of the Oversight Committee, wanted to know where the hell those taxpayer dollars were going. We have reached a level here of a dictatorial presidency. We've gone well beyond imperial.
Yeah. Biden ran as a moderate, but he has governed as a radical. And you go back, people say, well, Trump changed things a lot, but Trump ran saying what he was going to do. And you know, God help him, he actually did it. So there was no falseness in advertising with Trump. But with Biden, we've got a very different presidency than the American people thought that they were electing in 2020. And we have a chance, we're a democracy, we have a chance to rectify that in next year. And we really have to do that because we have a runaway federal government, as I was mentioning.
Well, China, for example, is dealing with Joe Biden, who they've basically bought. When you look at the tens of millions of dollars that the Biden family, referring to Congressman Comer and the Oversight Committee, saying they have abundant evidence, overwhelming evidence on the business dealings and Joe Biden's knowledge of those dealings as they investigate influence peddling. This is a time in which the presidency has more power than at any time in the history of this country. And it's not an accident, because famously, Barack Obama said, as long as he had the power of the of his telephone and his pen, he would, you know, he'd be just fine with Congress opposing him. And this is the third term of Barack Obama, obviously. So there we have it. These Democrats, these Marxist Dems, are running this just as totalitarian a manner as would a leader of the Soviet Union, for crying out loud.
Yeah, you know what's paradoxical? You know, just a couple days ago, Biden gave an interview to David Muir of ABC, and he said that China's peace plan for Ukraine was not rational. That right. Biden was wrong. Yes, the peace plan that China proposed was very one-sided for Russia, but it was rational if you thought that the Chinese did not respect Biden. And that's exactly what's happened. They think they can fly a spy balloon over the United States. They think they can do this. They think they can do that. And they propose one-sided peace plans because fundamentally they do not think that Biden can oppose them. And so it is paradoxical that although, as you point out, that Biden is the most powerful president in history, our enemies don't view it that way. They view him as weak, as basically presiding over a society in terminal decline. And that means this is an extremely dangerous moment in history because the Chinese do not respect the United States. We are not deterring them. And therefore, we're seeing war in Ukraine, and we're seeing spy balloons, and we're seeing one-sided peace plans.
I think you're exactly right. And I also think it's important that the people of Europe understand that only with this president could they get away with what they're doing right now, with Ukraine aflame, devastated, and much of it destroyed, tens of millions of people displaced, and the death toll, I don't know, but it's got to be in the hundreds of thousands, it would seem to me. To look at that and think that we're talking about the modern European Union. This is 27 countries, 28 if you include the Brexited UK, an economy that is almost that of the United States, and in some nominal terms, actually larger than China itself. And we are the ones shipping hundreds of billions of dollars to Ukraine. Our troops are on the eastern flank. We're doing, proposed at least, about to do maneuvers with Poland and Germany. And where in the world is NATO? And why is the United States going over with the Secretary of Treasury, the Vice President, all of these folks from the Biden regime and the President himself for a photo op in Kiev? It is mindless. These people are living three decades behind the current economic and political realities.
Yeah. NATO without the United States is nothing. And I think that it is no coincidence that we had two world wars last century, that one started in Europe, the other one was continued in Europe. World War II probably started in Asia, but the big fighting started in Europe in 1939. And I think it's largely because of the structure of Europe. And the Europeans after World War II tried to remedy that by the European Union and by NATO and other things. But clearly, Europe has not coalesced. It is not able to defend itself. It is the United States. And that has all sorts of repercussions, some of which we are seeing right now. And it means that Europe is not a source of stability, Lou, as we all thought it was at some point, but it really is a source of instability, and it could be very well the start of the Third World War. And as I said, that's no coincidence. It's Europe, the structure of Europe itself.
Yeah, and it's also the woeful lack of leadership on the part of the largest members of the European Union and NATO, whether it's Germany, whether it's France, the UK. They have not since, well, the 80s on, I had great leadership in the UK or Germany or France, the principal economies of the European Union, or of Europe, I should say, since I'm still trying to get used to the fact that the UK hasn't withdrawn from the European Union despite their vote over the course of the next decade. Perhaps they will. It's an economy larger than anyone credits. They have less debt than the United States, and we are shipping money to Ukraine. We are doing almost nothing in Southeast Asia. We're doing almost nothing with Japan and the Philippines. We have awakened to the fact that we do need to be positioned strategically in the Philippines and be more engaged with the Japanese and beyond, I think. South Korea is obviously as well. This is not a foreign policy that we're watching. This is an ad hoc, a la carte approach to reactionary geopolitics.
And let me remind your listeners of something that you taught me, and that is we've just completely neglected Latin America and the Caribbean. I mean, these are countries very close to us. These are countries that are exporting problems to us. And we're still not paying attention to our own region. And you were the first to sound the alarm on this. So it's really important that, yeah, Asia is important. And I, of course, I think Asia is important because I focus on China. But we need to make sure that we have a secure hemisphere, because we have the Chinese and the Russians and the Iranians and God knows who else creating trouble in Latin America and the Caribbean. China, for instance, is building or has built what looks like the next Chinese naval base, which is in Freeport in the Bahamas, 87 miles east of Palm Beach, for God's sakes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have a container port, which is failing. The Chinese can very well take it over because they built it. They could put their Navy in there. I mean, how
through the Belt and Road program.
Belt and Road program. And it's not the only Chinese port project in the region. They own the Panama Canal at both ends. And they are infiltrating the region, destabilizing governments, you name it.
And if we're going to talk about alarms and regions, certainly nothing is more important than that which is most proximate militarily and in geopolitics. The Caribbean, Central America, South America, there is no way in the world we should be tolerating this, and we should be responding powerfully to the intrusion. But we're not. When it was Barack Obama, remember, who famously on a fine November day decided to announce that the Monroe Doctrine was dead. This is the kind of madness that has been heaped upon us. Jimmy Carter decided that we shouldn't be engaged with the Panama Canal, and in some sort of massive historic virtue signaling, decided to turn it back to Panama and leave it wide open for what is it the Biden administration likes to call them, the competitors of the United States? They're the damn enemies of the United States.
Right. I mean, we have, just to take one of those problems, I mean, we have all of those border crossings right now from Central America. And the reason is that those areas were decimated by China's entry into the World Trade Organization. Factories left every country in our hemisphere, but as well as in Central America. And now Central Americans, without hope, without jobs, they want to migrate to the United States. But we can stabilize that. We can bring factories back to the United States. We could also bring some factories which wouldn't come back to American soil. They could go to Central America and get cheaper labor than they have in China. And that would stabilize those societies, which means we wouldn't have millions of people trying to cross our border. And by the way, Lou, there are dramatically increasing numbers of Chinese refugees. Most of them are real refugees, but I'm sure the Ministry of State Security has put their agents in that refugee flow to act as saboteurs and to act as saboteurs at the time they get a signal. So we got a real problem in our border. It's not just fentanyl is a Chinese problem. We've got probably Chinese agents coming across our border not monitored.
I think unquestionably. And furthermore, we have no interior immigration enforcement. We have no appetite whatsoever, no political will in this country to defend that border. It has de facto been turned over to the Mexican drug cartels, who are working hand in glove with the Chinese for fentanyl pharmaceutical ingredients, and their scientists, as you well know, are helping those cartels in the manufacture of fentanyl that is now coming into this country in ever greater, massive, deadly quantities. And when I say deadly, we're talking about the capacity to kill the American population two or three times over.
Yes, some of those fentanyl seizures recently are so large that they could kill every American. And we know that the Communist Party is backing the fentanyl gangs because in China's total surveillance state, those fentanyl gangs could not operate without the approval of the party. And the gangs actually launder their money through the Chinese state banking system. Chinese diplomats support the fentanyl gangs. And we're not holding the Communist Party to account. And that's... 2 years ago, that was about 77,000 Americans who had died from illegal fentanyl doses. When we get the numbers for last year, is probably going to be in excess of 80,000 for sure. That's 80,000 Americans who have been murdered last year by Communist Party, in addition to the COVID deaths.
Yeah. Well, when you start looking at what is happening, the Chinese military strategists, and some of them going back as far as Sun Tzu, acknowledging that to not fight a war is even better than winning a war. And what we are watching is a country that is strategically going after the United States in every way, subverting it wherever it can, covertly, and now in plain view. And there is such little appetite, stomach, or if you will, guts on the part of the American public to contend with what is in their face. And that is their own, they're being bled every day. We are being bled every day by the Chinese Communist Party, whether it is the theft of intellectual property, whether it is the purchase of farmland and strategically placed real estate, whether it be companies, front companies that are running, gaming us every day for hundreds of billions of dollars in intellectual property, are outright theft of. It is sickening to watch what this country doesn't have the courage or the wits to deal with.
Yeah, I've been talking to a lot of audiences around the country, and I think the American people know what to do. It's just that the political leadership is corrupted or naive or just stupid. But whatever it is, we're not being defended by the people that we elected. The American people, I think, are angry, Lou. They want to do something. And by God, we're going to do it because we got elections coming up next year. And we can change things, and we will change things.
Not with Ronna McDaniels, the head of the RNC, not with the contentious divide in the Republican Party, the establishment attacking Donald Trump, the leader of the party, the only person in the Republican Party who has had an original idea in, I think, decades. He is being gamed, attack from every quarter. He is being politically persecuted in favor of establishment, what would I call them, dupes, that the American people, you saw that Jeb Bush came out and supporting Ron DeSantis. I have no problem with Ron DeSantis, but Ron DeSantis is not, I think, on the right side of history or the right time in history. It is ridiculous to watch this and to see what a number of networks are doing. They've picked their favorites, and they are pressing forward with establishment candidates. And we have an electorate who can't even get an honest election time after time. We're watching it rigged, if you will, whatever you want to call it, stolen. This is absurd to see these illegitimate elections and people walking around with their heads on their hands, woefully saying, well, you know, we're just not going to be able to engage. Some are, no question about it. Those are America Firsters. Those are MAGA Republicans. But unfortunately, the party has so many rhinos and rhino liberals that it's enough to make you sick to your stomach.
We all need more Lou Dobbs in our life, because you called it early, Lou, and you have never wavered. And, you know, I have, and so many people across the country, because they tell me, they look at you and they say, his ideas are what are going to save us.
Well, that's very kind. Now we need to have somebody to, to actually go get them. And as you and I are talking about, to be energized and devoted to this country and drive every single idea to implementation. Think about what we have to do. I mean, Donald Trump wants to build a wall. Frankly, I'd never thought about building a wall. I was against illegal immigration. But you know what? It makes all the sense in the world. It is a practical matter, and as a practical matter, it's employed, by the way, including, what is it, the Great Wall of China is, what, 13, 14,000 miles long? I mean, if they can do it and live by it, why could we not?
Right. Yeah, it was meant to keep out the Manchu invaders. And I do remember that when Nancy Pelosi was speaker, she built a chain link fence around the Capitol. you know, these people live in walled compounds. So yeah, walls do make sense.
And so much makes sense. Lower taxes instead of higher, accountability of the American people, things like consent of the governed, co-equal branches of government, and accountability. I hope that we can get to that point, but waiting for the next election, and I have to say to you, I don't believe we can wait. I saw a picture of Ronald McDaniel today talking about loyalty oaths. I want to see the loyalty oath to the United States of America. There's going to be a loyalty oath. And I'm not so sure some of these folks who call themselves politicians and Republicans who are actually rhinos, who act in absolute disregard of their citizenship in this great republic. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm a political independent, but I can't believe the Republican Party or the Republican National Committee reelected Ronald McDaniel. I was shocked. I mean, I don't follow these things, Lou, but I figured that a record of failure would merit expulsion, but apparently not in the Republican Party.
Not in the Republican Party, certainly. I think the healthiest thing I've seen happen to the Republican Party since the election of Donald Trump has been the bargaining that took place between the Freedom Caucus and the so-called 20 who bargained with Kevin McCarthy for the speakership and to get representation of good, strong, American, committed conservatives and Republicans who want the best for this nation and put America first. That's to me, it is exhilarating to see the weaponization committee, the so-called new church committee, dealing with the weaponization of the U.S. government, and also, without question, the China committee, to have the courage to do that and to move forward. And they are moving forward. Your thoughts about all of that?
Lou, it's Lexington and Concord time. This time is consequential because we Americans, we are our own last line of defense.
Well said. And as always, we give our guests the last word here, Gordon. And if I may turn to you for your concluding thoughts on this beautiful day in America.
It's a beautiful day in America, but it is a time where we have to save our republic. We can lose it, Lou. We can lose it not just to the Chinese and the Russians and all the rest. We can lose it to the forces in our own country. You know, when I was growing up, I thought about Rome and I said, how could Rome fall apart? You know, America will never fall apart. And in the last couple of years, I've seen America fall apart. So we've got to go out and save it. And so I'm with you.
Well, I am delighted because I'm with you, Gordon, and I appreciate it. And we're with this, most importantly, we're with this great American Republic of ours. And you're terrific to spend so much time with us here today. As always, we appreciate your insight and your knowledge and your wisdom. Gordon Chang, thank you.
Thank you, Lou.
Thanks, as always, to our friend Gordon Chang. And now we turn to the internal political realities with one of the country's leading political strategists and pollsters, John McLaughlin. Great to have you here on the Great America Show, John. Give us your perspective now and your thoughts about America in this strange, sometimes bizarre political period we're living through.
Well, I think we're really at a unique time in American history because Donald Trump was a very unique president. Historic president in that he beat the Republican establishment for the nomination, then he beat the Washington establishment for the election. And, you know, they beat him, or they at least took the presidency 4 years ago, and now he's coming back, and we're 320 days away from the first votes being cast in the Iowa caucus.
Wow.
And, right, but he's the front runner. And he announced in November after the election, and there was a little waning during the holidays. And what we have now is, I mean, in our last poll at the end of February, Donald Trump was ahead of the Republican field in a multi-candidate race, 42-26. he definitely was beating Ron DeSantis in a 1-to-1 challenge, 56-38, which is higher than January. He was 52-40. And he's leading Joe Biden 48-44. And he's had that lead nationally over Joe Biden since Biden surrendered Afghanistan. So we're really in a unique phase where you have a president who, by the way, when you ask Republican primary voters, should he run again? 57% said yes. And 76% said they'll support him, to only 20% no if he runs again among these Republican primary voters. Mm-hmm. So there's a gap between his actual vote and should he run again. And we asked him why they weren't supporting him. It wasn't that they didn't dislike him. They're just looking at the other candidates. And what we're seeing is now is Donald Trump is back out on the stump. He's gone to South Carolina, New Hampshire. He's going to be going to Iowa. He made a great visit to East Palestine when these people in Ohio were suffering after the Biden administration, you know, just totally bungled a toxic train derailment where they've opened up this 21st century love canal where they've definitely poisoned the people of Ohio and Pennsylvania with what's going on. And Joe Biden took off to Ukraine to give hundreds of, you know, millions of dollars to the Ukrainians, or billions of dollars to the Ukrainians, while Americans here are suffering and could use that money. And he still hasn't been to East Palestine. But the big difference was Donald Trump went there, told those people, and he brought his own, you know, he's a corporate businessman. He brought his own bottled water and went to the McDonald's, was buying food for people. And he's doing what he could as a citizen. And people are hurting. So it's really historic in that the conditions that allowed Donald Trump to win in 2016 have only become exponentially more aggravated since then, where he is now, I mean, his speech at CPAC was great because it was a clarion call to the working men and women of America against the political establishment. And, you know, he just had a tremendous success at CPAC, which was held inside the Beltway. And he had these conservatives come, over 2,000 conservatives cast their vote, which they have to pay to go to the conference. And only one person gets to vote there. You know, we do the survey. My brother Jim oversaw it. And, you know, only one person gets a vote. And you have to be a participant in the conference. And Donald Trump won 62% of the vote. Ron DeSantis didn't even go, but he got 20%. And, you know, when they asked him for vice president, Carrie Lake got 19% to DeSantis' 14% to Nikki Haley's 10%. So Donald Trump is really gaining momentum, because two-thirds of the country, 65%, say we're on the wrong track. They say the economy is getting worse, not better, 61-33%. Still 4 to 5 voters been impacted by inflation, 37%, telling us that they can't even make ends meet for basic necessities. So, you know, Donald Trump is getting ready to move the country forward again, and we've got 320 days to go till we start voting in the Iowa caucuses. Then 8 days later, New Hampshire. So it's a marathon, but he's up for it.
That number, 40 points, is pretty significant, even if it is a straw poll. At, excuse me, at CPAC. I mean, that's impressive. I don't know that has there ever been one any stronger than that.
No, I mean, when 95% of those voters there approved of the job he did as president, and the vast majority strongly approved. And, you know, this is it's not the 20th century with Ronald Reagan, where it was mourning in America. And I used to go. We loved Ronald Reagan. He was great. He was my hero at the time. And now you've got Donald Trump, and things in America are not as good as it was in the 20th century. So when you look at what's going on with the middle class and the exploitation, and what's going on with China in the world, and what's going on with, you know, you've got Russia invading Ukraine, they're not afraid of Joe Biden. And these are times where most Americans will tell you the country's gone backwards, and we have never gone backwards before in our history. And for most voters to feel that way, there's anger right now at the ruling class, the elites, the establishment. And forget, when you get, you know, a couple thousand conservatives traveling inside the Beltway to send the establishment a message at a conference where they literally you know, went at the establishment, they went at the ruling class of the country, and you know, they're being censored, they're being shunned by these people that exploit us, and you know, the grassroots around the country are being rallied by Donald Trump once again to give them hope that we can take back our country.
Yeah, they are the forgotten Americans who Donald Trump embraced in 2015 and 2016, and won the presidency. That's before him again. We are in a different situation though, than in 2016. We have greater clarity about the role of the federal government, the political corruption of the federal government, the so-called deep state. I think most Americans now have no illusions about what the Democrat Party is. It is a Marxist-led party with a Marxist agenda, and they mean to destroy everything from the nuclear family to the founding values of the country, and to roll over this political system into a one-party system. It's not the uniparty, as some insist on calling it. It's not a two-tier justice system. It's one party, one centralized, autocratic, totalitarian government that they dream of, and which they do better than dream, because they're actually executing the plan and doing so, I think, brilliantly, while Republicans, independents, libertarians are all sitting there slack-jawed at what is happening before their very eyes and what is happening nearly every day in Washington, D.C. Your thoughts?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, when I read Mark Levin wrote about that book about American Marxists, I didn't know these names, really register. But you could see it all around you when you know that people like George Soros are financing this with their nonprofits, with their open borders, nonprofits that are funding the cashless bail. And you had a situation this week where a bunch of people, terrorists attacked like the police academy in Atlanta, Georgia. And right. One of them was a lawyer for the Southern Poverty Legal Center. And what it is it's like you said, it's a Marxist communist plot where they know who they are, and they're basically, you know, trying to take down every institution and value in America so that a handful of people can, you know, take over the government and tell the rest of us what to do and take away our democracy and our freedoms and our right to free speech. So this is an existential battle, because the sad part is the establishment, the elites in the country, you know, they would rather have control. Like the Republican Party is the first hurdle in that you've got a situation where the grassroots in the Republican Party really resent what the country club Republicans are doing to us right now. And basically they need to realize that the caddies are now about to take over the country club, and we're going to run it, and we're going to get our president elected again. And we're tired of them losing elections or going along with the Democrats. I mean, you know, people talk about last November's election, they were trying to blame it on Trump. Well, twice the Republicans in the Senate voted with the Democrats to spend trillions of dollars on infrastructure bills that, you know, I'm not seeing the infrastructure. I mean, and all this Inflation Reduction Act, I haven't seen inflation reduced. I mean, we needed to stop spending last year and have a big fight before the election so we could take the Senate. Instead, we had Republicans go along with it. It absolutely undermined what we needed to do. Fortunately, House candidates took the Democrats on in inflation, and we won just enough to take over the House. And now a lot of these House members are doing what they said they were going to do, and they're showing the corruption of the Biden administration, specifically the Biden family. They're going after China in a way that, you know, letting Americans know how China has abused us and taken our jobs and spied on us and is exploiting us right now. And, you know, they're going to fight to stop taxes, and they're going to fight to stop the wasteful spending. But it's the backbenchers that are leading that fight, because the people are behind them.
And for the first time, the conservatives in the party, in the House, are truly represented across all of the committees, and with good placement in the most important committees, Judiciary, the subcommittee you just mentioned on weaponization. James Comer is chairman of the Oversight Committee. I mean, the list goes on. Strong conservative voices and minds leading those efforts. It is, and they're off, in my judgment, to a very good start. The test will be, of course, in the months ahead, but even now, as we sit here discussing this, the national left-wing corporate media is refusing to hold to account Joe Biden, his administration or regime, if you prefer. He's refusing to hold to account Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer or the deep state that continues to bedevil and politically persecute President Donald Trump. It is a moment in history that is building towards something very large, very important. And this destabilization that we're witnessing, not only in this country, but in Europe as well, and to a degree in Asia as well, this is deeply troubling.
I totally agree. I was in Europe last week, seeing clients over there, and you can see the people of Europe resent right now the fact that they're suffering because of these sanctions, that they're paying, you know, higher gas, fuel prices, etc. And certainly they don't like Russia. They want to, they're strong NATO allies that they don't want to be invaded. But on the other hand, there is no game plan from Joe Biden about how to end the war. Donald Trump has said he would end it in 24 hours, and it certainly would not have happened if he was president. You know, no way Vladimir Putin would have gone into Ukraine when Trump was president, because he would have known the consequences. And, you know, you're seeing right now where, people are concerned about the war spreading and catastrophic consequences, where there's intelligence reports coming out that we've got to worry about China and Russia and North Korea and Iran. Iran is very close to having a nuclear weapon if they don't already have it. And, these are really rogue states. They're not democratic. The world is very worried about what's going on right now. And they're not getting the leadership from America that they had with Donald Trump as president, and or that they've seen in the past from the United States.
So a couple of questions is, and I know you're limited in your time, but just a couple of more questions. What do you think of the, and I know this may be difficult, if not impossible, for you to answer, but I'm curious about whether or not the political team the president has around him right now, in your judgment as a professional, is better than what he had in 2020.
We're speaking about Joe Biden or President Trump?
President Trump.
Good. It's better. It's leaner and meaner. You've got Susie Wiseman managing things. She ran Florida twice for the Trump campaign, and we won decisively twice. You have Chris LaCivita in there, and I've worked with Chris before with Senator George Allen and when George was governor as well. And we've worked together since then. And Chris is known for running the super PAC efforts for the SWPO veterans against John Kerry. And Jason Miller's back running communications. So he's building a leaner, meaner team, and they are raising money now as he goes in campaigns, you know, but not the big dollar country club sets. Ironically, he's the blue collar billionaire that people of America will send him $50 or $100 online because they know he represents their interests. And, it is going pretty well, right, from what I hear right now, particularly after the CPAC speech, where he really, you know, let the establishment have it. And he's coming out with very specific plans. A lot of his videos aren't really getting wide play from the mainstream media, but he's come out with specific plans about what he's going to do with the federal government, how he's going to close the border, what he's going to do with China and trade and manufacturing. But it's all basically, you know, messages that would play to the heartland. So I think the messages are better. The basically that he's taking the offense, that he's taking the battle to Joe Biden. He attacks President Biden every day if he can. The fact that he is going into places where he's drawing a sharp contrast between Biden's failures and his successes, and with specific plans that are different than, you know, beyond what he did as president himself. So I think, you know, 4 years ago, they were afraid that, well, they didn't think Donald Trump would win. Now they're afraid he's going to win. And it's going to get tougher because, you know, Alvin Bragg, I mean, the Soros DA in Manhattan is holding, mm-hmm. you know, like he's holding a grand jury talking about indicting the president on some stuff from the past campaign. You know, I mean, they're going to do whatever they can to stop him. And even as we speak, the fact that the videos from the January 6th committee that weren't released, that Kevin McCarthy, Speaker McCarthy released now, and people can see, here they are, the police leading, Capitol Police, for some reason, leading these protesters into the Senate chambers, into the halls of Congress. And now you've got people in jail after being, you know, literally what some legal people are calling entrapped.
By the way, there's this video mm-hmm. leaves no question about the entrapment of the shaman, so-called, the man with the Viking hat and furs. He was being, without question, escorted through the Capitol. And there was no tension even in the moment, let alone in any act that he took. Right. So when we see all of this, when the Americans see it for themselves, and I love the fact that Chuck Schumer is outraged that Tucker Carlson showed video to the American people of that day, saying it's the most horrible thing he's ever witnessed in his life, when in fact that tells you everything you need to know about these Marxist Democrats.
Right.
And that is that they would rather tell you what you're seeing than allow you to see it. Right. And if the American people are stupid enough to put these Trotskyites back in office, I will be stunned this time.
No, Schumer, what a disgrace. He got on the Senate floor yesterday and called for censorship of Fox News.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of us, you know, have, you know, differences about how they've covered some of the things. But let me tell you, you know, for the Senate leader of the United States to call for censorship, because he knows that ultimately he and Nancy Pelosi made a decision not to call the National Guard, not to put fencing around the Capitol, as they've done at the White House, that they allowed this to happen. And, you know, and then they had the January 6th committee where they wouldn't even allow Trump Republicans on the committee. It was a kangaroo court. So this is an existential battle for the future of America like we've never seen before, this election that's coming up.
And, you know, I have to say this, you know, damn the national corporate media, because mm-hmm. they have the power as well as the responsibility to have held these Democrats to account. And they have greased the way forward into decline for this nation because of their conduct over the last 6 years. And you mentioned Bragg. I mean, we look around at these George Soros DAs playing politics. Fulton County, what a strange place that we would see indictments for Donald Trump emanating from, you know, one of the most left-wing counties in the country.
Well, you saw the video of the grand jury forewoman.
Yeah, the witch.
You're right, the Wiccan. It's like she's bizarre, and it's like, by the way, once you saw that, and once you saw these videos from January 6th, you know, it's undermining their. You know, this is the Democrats are the party that gave us two phony impeachments. And two phony
special counsels, too.
Right. To stop the leader of the working men and women of the United States, that God help them, that if the taxpayers really run the country instead of them. And, you know, we're not going to be stopped this time.
Yeah, we better not be, because I said that the election of 2022 was existential, that the Republicans had to win at least the House. They did just that, just barely. Mm-hmm. This can't be close in 2024. And by the way, Ronna McDaniel is not that person to lead the RNC. This had better not be amateur hour, because there won't be any surviving it for this country. Do you agree?
Well, as far as Ronna and the RNC, I've never worked for them while she's been the leader, so I really don't know.
This is your chance to get a contract.
By the way, when Reagan was president, Arthur Finkelstein, I worked for his firm. You know, we did work for President Reagan through the RNC. When George W. Bush was president, They hired us to, you know, after I worked for Steve Forbes, they hired us through the RNC to do work for President Bush, get him reelected. Nice. But when you work for President Trump, they don't hire you. So I don't know what's the problem with that. It must be my problem, I guess.
Well, it's actually Ronna McDaniel's problem. And it's the Republican Party's problem, because the people, you're talking about country club Republicans, man, that isn't a bunch. But it's an insult to every country club in the country, frankly, wouldn't say that. We always give our guests the last word, as you know, John. Your concluding thoughts here.
Well, you know, the great thing is we've started the year with some momentum. The country's problems have gotten even more serious. And clearly, when you're looking at that, people are really worried about the inflation, the economy, immigration and the border, crime in our streets. The only way we're going to solve this is a major change in the election. And it's a marathon. We are going to have to fight for this every day through the 320 days until we get to Iowa and win the caucuses. 8 days later, win New Hampshire. Then we've got to win in February. We've got to win in South Carolina. And once Donald Trump has the nomination again, the Democrats and the national establishment will go all out in every way possible to stop him. So this is a historic battle coming again, and we've got to make sure that we elect again our historic president who beat them in 2016 and make sure we beat them again.
John McLaughlin, as always, great to have you with us. Thanks, my friend.
Thank you.
John McLaughlin, thanks as always, and thanks everybody for being with us. We hope you have a great weekend. And Monday, our guest will be John Solomon, founder and editor-in-chief of justthenews.com. Please be with us for that Monday. Have a great weekend. Thanks, and God bless you. God bless America.